Seeing everyone again. I know normally this is a halacha series. Just today I wanted to go a little machshava, if I may, about brachas in general. We've been discussing birchas kohanim, and I just had a thought this morning to talk about. I was going to speak about a halachic topic. I'll save it for next week. But today's Beis Kislev, and the letter Beis, the Oz Beis, is really a remez for bracha. All bracha emanates from the letter Beis. That's why Bereshis, the world, the Torah starts with the letter Beis, because the only way there could be a creation of the world is with the letter Beis, when there's two, when there's multiple. Everything, you see letter Beis, a Bechor. A Bechor gets Pishnaim, gets double portion, because a Bechor represents a Bracha. The first child is an incredible Bracha. So that's why it gets double portion. The letters of Bechor itself, Beis, Chaf, Resh, are all twos. Beis is 2, Chaf is 20, Resh is 200. The number 2, the letter Beis, always represents bracha. The Beis is a bayis, a house. The house is full of bracha. The Beis HaMikdash is full of bracha. So I figured today's Beis Kislev, and Chanukah is a yontif, a holiday full of bracha. Let's discuss a little bit about Chanukah and bracha in general. And, Yosef HaTzadik, I want to talk about Yosef HaTzadik as well. He's connected to Chanukah, as we'll see shortly, and he was certainly a source of bracha. You know, the seven Ushpizen, we have seven Ushpizen that come visit us on Sukkot, and each of these seven Tzadikim correspond to the seven different Yomim Tovim throughout the year. So, for example, Avram is connected to Pesach, Yitzchak is connected to Shavuos, Yaakov is connected to Sukkot. And then there's David and Aaron and Moshe and Yosef. So, Who's connected Chanukah? So the Mefarshim tell us that Chanukah is connected Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik is the tzadik that represents Chanukah. Some say it's Aaron, there are different opinions. But I want to take the approach that Yosef HaTzadik is the tzadik that represents Chanukah. And it makes so much sense. And we're about to see, I'm going to explain to you something very fascinating in the story of Yosef and the brothers. We're going to jump a little bit ahead from where we are in the Parshios, in Parsha, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a very, very nice lesson, a beautiful idea for all of us to appreciate the story of Yosef and their brothers. So we know, to fast forward a little bit, when the brothers came down to Mitzrayim, they came down to get some food, bring food back to Yaakov and the rest of the Mishpacha. So what happened was that they're leaving Mitzrayim, and the Pasuk describes Vayiftach Ha'echad Esaka, one of the brothers opened up his bag, the Yaris Kaspo. He saw there was a silver a goblet, some silver, but maybe just a silver kesef placed on top of the bag. So who was the individual? Who was the echad that opened up this sack, this bag, and found kesef? Rashi tells us it was none other than Levi. Levi was the one who made this discovery because he was the echad. Why was he echad? Because we know Levi was partners in crime with Shimon. Shimon and Levi always coordinated with each other. So Shimon was held in jail back in Mitzrayim. So Levi was by himself on the way back with the rest of the brothers up back to Eretz Yisrael, but he was alone because he did not have his partner in crime. So Ha'echad, says Rashi, that was Levi. Levi was the first one to discover that there's Vayar as Kaspa. But when did the other brothers recognize that they too had Kesef, they too had silver that was placed in their bags? So the Pasuk says later on, Vayihi hei marikim sakem, when they got to the inn, they all emptied out their bags. Vinei, ish tzura kaspo besako. Each person saw that there was silver in their bag as well. Vayiras tzuros kasper, and they saw a lot of silver. So why did Levi immediately realize that he had silver in his bag, and the brothers only realized later on when they stayed over at the inn overnight when they emptied out their bags? How come only Levi recognized this? Marsha tells us in Maseches Tainis, Daf Tesam and Alf, he says, you know why? Because Yosef HaTzadik had the bags packed differently for Levi than the other brothers. Levi's bag was packed with silver at the top. The other brothers, the silver was at the bottom. So that's why Levi immediately noticed the silver on the top of the bag, and it took much later for the brothers to realize only after they emptied out the bag, they saw it on the bottom. So that begs the question, why? Why in the world did Yosef HaTzadik pack the bags in such a way where Levi's silver was on the top and the other brothers was on the bottom? So Marsha says the pshat was because Yosef HaTzadik understood that Shimon HaLevi was behind a lot of the bad things that happened to Yosef's life. Throwing in the boar, selling down to Mitzrayim. So he wanted to punish them. So Shimon was punished because Shimon was thrown into jail. How was Levi punished? Well, when Levi discovered immediately that he had the silver and he didn't ask for it, Levi thought that, oh my gosh, Yosef's going to find that I took silver. He's going to throw me into jail also. That anguish, the pain that Levi had, the nerves, he was so scared. That was intentional by Yosef to make him feel scared right away. Yosef didn't want the other brothers to be in fear, so he put it at the bottom. They wouldn't realize until much, much later on, until they left Mitzrayim and they were safe. But Levi, he wanted Levi to immediately realize the silver by putting it on the top. This way he'll be in fear until they finally leave Mitzrayim. That's the Maharsha's understanding why the bags were packed differently. But listen to this beautiful Jikover. The holy Jikover says, no, nothing to do at all with Yosef trying to terrorize Levi. Yosef was giving a message to Levi having to do with Chanukah. Having to do with the Yontif of Chanukah. What exactly was the message that the Yosef HaTzadik was trying to teach him? So we know that Chanukah, like we discussed, we know that Chanukah has to do with the Chashmonaim, the Kohanim. We know that Levi was the father of the Kohanim. So and Chanukah represents a time of bracha. Yosef was foreshadowing bracha to Levi about a certain nes, the nes Shemen of Chanukah. Yosef represents bracha. Yosef represents Tosefes bracha. That's his name himself. Yosef means to be Mosef, to add on. So Yosef himself had two sons. He had an extra son. Yosef brought bracha to all of Mitzrayim. So Yosef was giving a message to Levi about a bracha that's going to happen in the future to the descendants of Levi, to the Kohanim, to the Chashmonaim. How exactly was he teaching in this lesson? So we all experience a bracha in life, but the way a bracha of nes, of a bracha that comes from a miracle, there are two ways that could happen, says the Jikover. Some type of nisim, when there's an unlimited amount of Tosefes bracha. So the Jikover says, like the story of the Shunamis in the Nevi'im, she had an oil that was bottomless. It had endless amounts of oil. But there, says the Jikover, she would empty the oil out, the jug would be empty, and then it would refill up. Empty it out, get to the bottom, and refill. That's one type of Tosefes bracha. It always refills. But there's another type of Tosefes bracha, says the Jikover, which is when it never even empties, where it always stays to the top. Even when you pour it out, it's still full. It doesn't even drop to have to refill. The Jikover says, with the story of the Nes Shemen of Chanukah, it was the latter. It was when they emptied out the Pach Shemen, nothing lowered down. It stayed to the top the whole time. It didn't need to refill. It stayed to the very, very top. And the Jikover says, this explains the famous question of the Beis Yosef. What was the nace in the first night? There was plenty of oil the first night, as we know. That wasn't a nace. It was supposed to last. So the Jikover says, because the fact that the Pach Shemen didn't decrease at all. It stayed at the top the entire time. That was the nace the first night. That was the nace of the Pach Shemen. That was the Tosefes Bracha. So Yosef HaTzadik was trying to give a message to the brothers. The Chashmonaim, descendants of Levi, the Kohanim, descendants of Levi. Yosef placed the silver on top of Levi's bag, specifically his bag, to indicate you're going to experience a Pach Shemen. You're going to experience a Neshel Shemen that's going to stay to the top. It's going to rise to the top. Just like the silver was placed on top of your bag, that's the Pach Shemen is going to be. This was the Tosefes Bracha that he was sharing with him. So just like we know, I mentioned before, every single tzaddik corresponds to a different one of the seven Yamin Tovim. There's also what's called in Halacha the seven liquids. The seven liquids, it relates to Hilchos Tuma. That just for example, let's say I have an apple, and I'm Tamei Meis. So if I touch the apple, I'm a Tamei the apple. But it's only true, there's a prerequisite, that if the apple has to first come into contact with seven liquids, with one of the seven liquids. Now, if it comes into contact with water, for example, and then I touch it, it's tummy. So there's seven liquids. Now, these seven liquids correspond to the seven Yamim Tovim of the year. Now, pay attention. Once I tell you, it's going to be so intuitive to you. Rosh Hashanah is connected to Dvash. It's connected to honey. Right, very good. Moshe said, Yad Shochet Dam. Excellent. But I'm telling you, this is going to be an easier way to remember. Rosh Hashanah is honey. We all know how honey is Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur is dam. We sprinkle the blood on Yom Kippurim. Sukkot is maim when we ask for rain. Nisach maim. I'm going to skip Hanukkah for a second. Purim is yayin, where we drink wine. Pesach is tal. We daven tefillas tal. Shavuos is chalav, where we drink milk. We have milk, it's dairy. And of course, Hanukkah is shemen. Hanukkah is oil. It fits perfectly, the seven liquids, into the seven yamim tovim. So I don't need to tell you, it's not a chiddush that Hanukkah is resembles shemen. That was a whole nes. But we know it now. We see, understand that Hanukkah is a symbolic of Yosef and of shemen. Yosef is Tosefes Bracha, and shemen also is Tosefes Bracha. I'll explain in just a second how that is. But listen to this incredible remez. Shemen, right? You write the word shemen, shin, mem, nun. That's how you write it. Now, there's something called the osios benista, the gematria benista, the hidden letters. So if you take the letter shin, mem, nun, write it out, it becomes shin, yun, nun. The mem becomes mem, mem. And the nun becomes nun, vav, nun. So the hidden letters, the extra yud nun, the extra mem, and the extra vav nun with the hidden letters, that all together, that is the gematria, adds up to 156. That's the gematria of Yosef. Same exact gematria. Because Yosef is the hidden secret behind the shemen. Yosef is the hidden secret behind the bracha of the shemen. So how do we see shemen's a bracha? So it's famous that we know the number seven represents teva, nature. The number eight represents lemala, min hatevim. And you see the number eight throughout all of Hanukkah. It's 8 days long. Shemen is the lashon of shmona. Chashmonaim, the first letter is a ches, eight. The next part of it is shmonim, chashmonaim, shmonim, it's 80. That's eight there in the word chashmonaim. It's 8 days long, chashmonaim, the shemen that we're using for this. The Maral tells us that the Kohen is the conduit to giving bracha. The gematria of Kohen is 75, okay? 75 is between 70 and 80. 7 and 8 is the same thing as 70 and 80. So 75 is right between 70 and 80. Because the Kohen is the conduit to bring the bracha down from the number 8, from the Mal Mateva, down into our world. We've been discussing the past few weeks together different halachas related to Birchas Kohanim. It's the Kohen that's able to tap into the bracha and bring it down. He is the conduit to bring down that Kedusha to us. Hanukkah was orchestrated by the Chashmonaim, by Kohanim, to bring the Shemen, to bring the 8 days, to bring all that bracha to us into our world. But listen to this amazing thing. Part of this bracha is knowing ourselves, what our potential is. I mentioned this in the past. A bracha isn't a segula that you get something that you don't deserve. A bracha is when you realize what you do deserve. A bracha is really realizing your strengths, your capability. The letters neshama, we each have a unique neshama. My neshama is different than yours, and yours is different than mine. We each have our own unique tafkid in this world. The letters of neshama are the same exact letters as shmona, because it's hidden. The neshama, we can't see it. We don't see the bracha. But when we discover the hidden neshama that can't be seen, that can't be heard, that can't be touched, but there's a shmona, there's a hidden shemen within the neshama that has incredible bracha. Hanukkah, all of Kislev, represents finding the hidden light, finding the hidden talents that each of us have, even in the darkness. Even in the darkness, sometimes we fall down, but when we fall down, we have to find that we have a special neshama that's able to bring about this light. I was just reminded of a story when I was in high school. I hope you guys like basketball here. I love basketball. In high school, I played basketball on my high school team. I was a starting point guard. As an interesting side point, my center was Jared Kushner, famous now. So he was my center at the time. We played. We were the only two people to play both hockey and basketball team together. So I'll tell you about following Misa. We were once playing at another school at TABC. So I was a point guard, and it was a tie game. And there are around 20 seconds left in the game. And the other team had the ball, the opposite side of the court. So there was a timeout. They had set up a whole play. Now, the way the play was set up was the point guard on the other team was the opposite end of where the ball was being inbound. So I was standing between, as you're supposed to, between the inbounds and the guy in the opposite corner. I was standing at half court. So they blow the whistle. They have some movement. You hear the squeakiness of the sneakers, some picks, and moving here, moving there. And then finally, there's a guy, his name is Shami Elstein. The guy was a very built, athletic individual, much bigger than most of the people in the league. And he broke free. He had the ball, and he was taking the ball down. It was me versus him, and the point guard behind me. I'm backing up, playing defense. He's coming strong towards the net. And the clock's winding down, tie game. And then he's just going full force. He's not stopping, and he's a big guy, strong guy, muscular guy. And finally, I know there's no way I'm stopping him. So as he's coming close to the basket, I plant my feet to the ground, put my hands up, and just hope for the best. He plows right over me, knocks me to the floor very, very strongly. I fall down, and there's a sudden silence. There's a whistle, and nobody knew where the whistle was because I was blocking him as a foul on me, or perhaps it was a charge. And I was just knocked down. I was awake. It was a hard hit. And the referee makes the sign like this, which is a charging on the other team. We got the ball. I jump up with this adrenaline of excitement. There's nothing better than drawing a charge. No matter how much it hurts, how much it's embarrassing, you get knocked over. When you get the charge, you get back up with all that strength. Kislev and Hanukkah represent when we live in a time when we feel like we've fallen down, when we've broken, when there's a time of darkness, a time of choshech, a time of yavan. But we have to be reminded that those times of darkness, those moments of Yerida, are opportunities to come back up even stronger with an incredible aliyah, with incredible strength. We have to discover what our talents are, what our strengths are. When I'm not sure I shared with you how I proposed to my wife. Happens to be my wife and I, it's our anniversary next week, 18 years, Baruch Hashem. Happened to be, we're going down to Florida tonight. We're going somewhere for a long Shabbos weekend, not in Boca, but somewhere else for a nice weekend. My in-laws are watching the kids. So I'm not supposed to make that too public, but it's public to you guys right now. Anyways, so I'll tell you how I proposed 18 years ago. My wife knew we were getting engaged. Everything was worked out beforehand. And it was the L'chaim was planned Monday night in her parents' house. So I took her out to dinner Sunday night. And she was expecting me to propose to her Sunday night. And this way, all of Monday will be exciting. Everything will be done and complete and then prepare for the party. And I'm a big proponent of surprises. I like the surprise. So how did I surprise her? So after I took her out to dinner that night, I dropped her off at her parents' house. And the night was over and she was a little disappointed that I didn't propose to her. But little did she know, after I dropped her off, I drove down the block a couple houses and waited in front of the house, a couple of doors down. Why? Because I had asked her younger sister. I bought from eBay some glow-in-the-dark letters. And I asked her sister to go tape on the ceiling of my wife's bed, "Will you marry me?" With the goal of, the moment she turns the lights off and she says, "Okay, I guess it's not happening tonight," she'll see a bright light, "Will you marry me?" And that'll be the surprise. So I wait 10, 15, 20 minutes, and I was expecting like a call, excitement, crying maybe, but there's no call. So I pick up the phone and I call my wife. At the time, not yet, but I call her up and I say, "What are you doing?" And she says, she's up in her bed, she's all emotional, she's crying, she's so excited. I said, "We have a big day tomorrow night, you should get some sleep, it's late, go to sleep, turn the lights off." So I convinced her to turn the lights off. And then I was expecting like a big screech, "Oh my gosh, mazel tov!" But there was silence, there was nothing. So then I said to her, Do you see any lights? Are any lights on in your room?" She said, "No, my lights are off. It's pitch dark in here." I say, "Okay, are there any lights? Do you see anything?" She says, "I see some lights on my ceiling, but it's coming from her window. There's a reflection from the outside, a light on outside." I said, "Okay, is there anything strange about the light that's on your ceiling?" She said, "Not really, but I don't have my glasses on." I said, "Go put your glasses on." She has very strong prescription. So she puts on her glasses, and she looks up, and she doesn't see anything. And I'm trying everything, and she's not seeing it. Finally, I tell her, "Just, turn on your light, and do you see anything on top of your bed?" And finally, she turns on the light, and she sees, it says, "Will you marry me?" And apparently, the glow-in-the-dark letters didn't work. I was told afterwards you have to freeze them first for them to be effective. They were ineffective. But in the end of the day, sometimes you have to be able to find the light that's hidden in the darkness. Sometimes we look at ourselves in the mirror and we try to figure out what's going on in our life. What can we accomplish? Where's our hidden kochos? Where are our hidden strengths? And the truth is, it's in your own neshama. in your own neshama has the potential of that shemen at the tosefes of bracha. That's what really Hanukkah represents, the ability to find a person's own organas. Yosef Tzadik was zocha to incredible success, to incredible leadership. But you know why? You know what the key to leadership is? Humility. Our greatest leaders in Jewish history, the way they're able to find themselves was through humility. Moshe Rabbeinu, our greatest leader, as we know, was Anav Mikol Adam. He was the most humble person ever to step foot on this earth. David HaMelech describes his anivus. He compared himself to a talas, to a worm. Abraham Avinu was Afra. He was nothing more than dirt and dust. He was as humble as they get, and he was the first of the Avos. How do you have leaders of humility? How could that? It's a stira. To be a leader, you need to be strong, you need to be powerful, you need to be aggressive. Moshe Rabbeinu, who didn't want to go lead the people out, he felt he didn't have the proper way to speak, and yet he was able to lead 600,000 men through the Midbar. Abraham Avinu, David HaMelech, who was the king of Klal Yisrael, he was going to lead to Mashiach. He was so humble, and yet he was a king. How could that be? So we have to understand, what is leadership? We have to understand, what's humility? Humility is not about being a doormat. Humility doesn't mean that you're nothing. You know what humility means? It's a famous Gemara, the last line of Masechta Sota. The Gemara says, Mishemes Rebbe, batal anavo. When Rebbe died, there's no longer humility in the world. Rav Yosef says, what are you talking about? I'm still around. I've got humility. What a strange Gemara. No one talks about their own humility. But the understanding is that humility is not about being a doormat. Humility is about understanding your strengths, understanding your neshama, understanding what you're able to accomplish, and not worried about the other guy. Humility is about staying in your lane. Focus on what you're able to accomplish. Know your strengths, and also know your weaknesses. Know your friend's strengths, and know your friend's weaknesses. But don't go to his lane. Focus on what you're able to accomplish. That's what made David so strong, when Avram was so strong and Moshe as such a leader. They knew what they were capable of doing, and they also knew what others were not. Moshe says, I'm not a speaker. I'm not an orator. I don't have the ability to speak. He knew that was a weakness. But at the same time, he knew what his strengths were in terms of learning, in terms of teaching, in terms of leading in other ways. So humility is recognizing what you're able to accomplish. Doesn't mean you're nothing. It means you stay on your goal. Stay focused on what you're able to accomplish in life. Don't be bothered. Don't be distracted by people around you. Ramosha, there's a story about Ramosha Feinstein, Zeicha Tzadik Livracha, that when he had to go through some operation, he wanted to know all the details, but he was concerned that he may not, he said, a Mashiach comes now. He knew he'd be part of the Sanhedrin, and he had to make sure that this wouldn't disqualify him from being part of the Sanhedrin. How could Ramosha say that he knew he'd be part of the Sanhedrin? Because Ramosha knew who he was. He wasn't about Gai v'chas Hashem. He was so humble, Ramosha Feinstein. But you have to know who you are. You have to know what you're able to achieve in this world. That's really true humility. They have a maysa about Rav Chatzkel Abramsky. He was once in a court in England. And the lawyer was questioning him and says, is it true that you're the wisest of the rabbis in the world? And Rav Abramsky says, yes, that is true. And the judge intervenes. The judge says, wait a second. Isn't a very big part of your Judaism, your religion, to be humble? How could you say you're the wisest man? And Rav Abramsky said, what could I do? I'm under oath. I need to tell the truth. Humility is about recognizing your true colors, recognizing your strengths and your weaknesses. Sometimes you have to give someone else to do something that you're not able to accomplish. It's about working with each other. Hanukkah is about finding the shemen, finding the neshama, finding the special qualities that you have, even in a moment of darkness, even when a person's feeling so low. That's what Yosef Tzadik, he had a Yerida down to Mitzrayim, and yet he was able to be the leader. He was able to be full of brachot, recognizing that. I don't know if you saw, there's an incredible video, a number of videos about Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs, Zichron Livracha. An incredible video I just read the other day, I saw the other day on YouTube, you can look it up. He's talking about leadership. And he says when he was 20 years old or so, he was in Cambridge, and he came to America, and he came to visit, and he had a meeting with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe had done something very unusual in their conversation. And he was asking the Lubavitcher Rebbe about a lot of questions in philosophy, which the Rebbe knew all the answers to, which in itself is a fascinating thing. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was an incredible genius in all areas of Torah and life. So after Lubavitcher Rebbe answered all the questions about philosophy, so then he turned around the questions to start asking Rabbi Sacks, so Rabbi Sacks, you go to Cambridge University. He says, what are you doing to help the Jews that are around you? What are you doing to make them stronger? What are you doing to make them more religious? What are you trying to accomplish in life? And the Rabbi Sacks started to explain back to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the way Rabbi Sacks had said this was, he was much more English then, from when he was telling the story, and he said in a very poetic way, or the way maybe Shakespeare would say it, the way, the place in which I find myself in, and then the Lubavitcher Rebbe cut him off mid-sentence. He said, you don't find yourself in places. You put yourself in places. And just like you put yourself in this place in Cambridge, you could put yourself in another place and to accomplish other things as well. And at that moment, Rabbi Sacks had this moment of understanding who Lubavitcher Rebbe was. He says, everybody thought Lubavitcher Rebbe was a great leader because he had thousands upon thousands of followers. He says, that's not the case. That was the furthest thing that Lubavitcher Rebbe cared about, is having followers. What Lubavitcher Rebbe cared about was a good leader has followers. A great leader makes leaders. Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't want to be a leader to have people follow him. He wanted to empower other people to be leaders. He wanted to empower other people to reach their strengths, to accomplish other things as well. And Rabbi Sacks realized at that time, he said he wanted to be an accountant. He did not want to be a leader. But that moment when he met the Rebbe at 20 years old, he realized that he was being challenged by the Lubavitcher Rebbe that he should be a leader himself. And wherever you find yourself, find what your strengths are. Rabbi Sacks certainly did find his strengths, what he accomplished for his community, for the world, as a spokesman for us throughout the world, was incredible. But the celebration of Hanukkah is that each of us are not followers. We are leaders in our own right. Whether that means we're a leader in our family, whether we're a leader in the community, in the shul, in work, we are leaders. But the way to become a leader is with humility. Humility means, doesn't mean you're a nothing. Humility means you know what you're capable of accomplishing and being bold about that. Go after what you're able to accomplish, but don't chase after what someone else is going to accomplish. And that's the great lesson of Yosef HaTzadik. That's the great lesson of Hanukkah. Because the Shemen of Hanukkah, the 8 days of Hanukkah, Chashmonaim, the number 8, all that is really the hidden letters of Neshama. So when we find our Neshama, what the Neshama is speaking to us, what it should be accomplishing, then we'll be Zocha to all the Tosefes Bracha. So until next week, guys, it was great seeing you. We should really be able to find inside not only ourselves, but inside of everybody else, their qualities, their great leadership qualities, make leaders to spread the name of Hashem, the Torah, throughout the entire world.